have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, another guest episode here on the Business Broker Growth Show. Today I have one of my longest business broker relationship friends in the industry, Michael Lamb. He is the co-founder and managing partner of Corporate Advisory Solutions. Michael, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Great to be here, man. It's great that you do this.
I appreciate that. And it's fun. And for people in the audience, we'll get into your background and what you do in the industries. It's interesting because I know you from my time dealing with sales, dealing with marketing, dealing with call centers, working with collection call centers and kind of the conferences and all that stuff made for us to be networking connected sometime in the past, which then led to this kind of reunion under the business broker side. You focus on M&A, you focus on deals. Specifically, I know your industry focus, credit collections, call centers, BPOs, healthcare, revenue cycle management, debt settlement, lead gen, affiliate market, everything in that. So, you know, let's talk about kind of how that came about for you as an industry focus. You know, a lot of brokers out there are generalists and you're pretty specific.
Yeah. I mean, for us, Jason, for me, at least, when I started getting into M&A, I was before that doing venture capital work with Israeli technology companies. And then that led to getting into M&A. And I stumbled into it because it was September, right after September 11th, the world had basically blown up and I had to figure out what to do. And investment banking was a good segue for what my skill set was at evaluating early stage companies. But I knew nothing about the call center and collections industry when I got into it 25 years ago. And so I joined a firm. They taught me a lot. And then I went ahead and started my own about 14 years ago called Corporate Advisory Solutions. And our core area of focus, as you mentioned, tech-enabled business services, but we have three buckets that we do all of our M&A, valuation, exit prep work in. Very big in the credit and collections area, call center BPO, healthcare revenue cycle management, debt settlement, all the specialty finance stuff that wraps around it, as well as all the technology that that supports these ecosystems. And it's been a great home, and we do M&A, more sell side than buy side, valuation and other consulting work. And it's been a great run.
It's wild as you're talking about that, because you said, you know, you got started in this 9/11 Israeli call centers. And then you're like 14 years ago decided to start CAS. And it's wild to think that, you know, 9/11 was so long ago. I guess, you know, for some of us it feels like it wasn't that long ago. Right. To think about how much has happened since then. You know, if we look at this and kind of give it's a two-part kind of optional question/answer for you is your company published Q4 2025 wrap-up report with some insights. We're recording this April of 2026, so that was, you know, the tail end of last year. But over the years, over the 14 years and or what you saw in the kind of the industry wrap-up and in the info, what have you seen change the most in these industries that you're dealing with?
Technology, man. I mean, you've been in, you've seen these industries too, Jay. I mean, it's changed so much with technology and digital transformation that when I look at our quarterly wrap-up last year, and if I was to compare it to what it was 20-something years ago, technology is kind of the biggest thing. It's wild to see how much it's changed.
And I'm going to guess within all that stuff, technology was always a part of it, but it was probably, you know, the on-prem call center phone system plus maybe a CRM and very rudimentary. And
people, what is it? People, Jason, people. I mean, think about what it was like 20 something years ago. And yeah, it had all that, but it was so heavily reliant on manual dialing. And it's nothing like what it was then. It still has elements of it. It just changed so much.
Yeah. And so in this era right now where everyone wants AI, everyone's talking about AI, very few people are responsibly using it in a business, right? They're buying it. It sounds good, but like, do they know what to actually do with it? What's your thought, especially?
I love it. I think it's great, but it's a tool. It's a tool. It's not the end all be all. And I think the more people can understand that and understand how to utilize the tool to make things more efficient, more profitable, create more opportunities for sales and marketing, it's amazing. I think it's going to continue to change the landscape of the industries we play in, but I would say it's going to take some time. I tend to be more cautious about new tech and changes, and I'm glad I am, because I really think that the world is going to continue to shift. I just don't know if it's going to shift at the pace that everyone thinks it's going to shift at, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Where do you think this is, you know, a bubble, like a dot-com bubble talking about 20 something years ago?
I mean, I just remember back then, you know, when pets.com was trading at some stupid valuation. It feels so similar to that every company, every market I see is .AI. And I wonder if there will be a reckoning, just like there was back then, where there'll be winners and there'll be losers. And I think we're going to see some of that. I don't know if it's going to look the same as the .com and .bomb era, but it may have different elements to it. And I think that's going to create some really interesting opportunities for companies and industries that are slow to move and gravitate to AI-enabled businesses.
Where are you seeing sellers buying AI or trying to put it in a place that's not working as they're going to try to sell their businesses?
Because I'm feeling
like they're buying technology and they're just no idea what
many of them are, and we caution against it. We want them to do more research and development before they become AI enabled or whatever they're defining themselves as.
Yeah.
I'd rather see them, the buyers that are coming to the table want to know what their AI strategy is. They're asking that question a lot. Like, what are you going to do with AI? What is your game plan? And we're coaching a lot of companies to say, well, do you even have a game plan? And if you don't, how is it going to affect what you're doing on a day-to-day basis before you go and you sell the company? Because a lot of companies are trying to figure it all out. They're trying to be smart about it as best they can before they dump millions and millions of dollars into something they don't know it's going to give them the return on the investment they think it will. So
are you seeing buyers thinking they can just solve everything with AI and they just want to, you know, buy businesses that they feel like they can just rehab like a old home?
I think it's more what the roadmap is to getting to that, getting to that place. And some of the buyers are coming in and saying, we're coming out of Silicon Valley, we've got engineering, we are going to AI enable this business. That may mean that if they're coming to the table with all the ideas and the thesis, they may not be willing to pay as much for the business they're defining as old school, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out where you're sitting with your business today. So if you're at 3 million of EBITDA, but you know that you want to get to 5, you know you've got to AI enable yourself to get there in order to maximize value versus somebody else coming in and doing it for you. Those are all decision points that people need to think through and figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah, to me, you know, on a simple level, I think of real estate and houses, and that's like, should we remodel the kitchen and the bathroom and should we repaint before we sell? Or are we okay getting what we're going to get because a new buyer is going to come in and want to you know, fix this up, right?
Right. It's just, it's a great analogy. It's a great way of thinking of it. It's the same concept. It's just, I think that the question a lot of business owners are asking is, where do I invest from an AI perspective? Because they don't know. Nobody really does. They think they do. But we are seeing in our deals, though, like if we're selling a deal, a company or platform to private equity, is bringing in their own AI experts from McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group or whoever to evaluate what they should be thinking about from an AI lens. And I think that's great. I think everyone's kind of thinking about it and knowing how impactful it can be. And it certainly can be impactful in the industries we play in. But I think there's pieces to it that need to be evaluated before you dump the millions of dollars of investment into it.
How often do you get business owners, sellers come to you and they want to sell now versus how many do you have that are like, let us know how long it'll take for us to get ready?
I prefer, because I've been doing this for so long, we're long-term hold guys, right? So meaning that we're not rushing anybody out to market. We don't, you know, we want them to feel like they are ready to go to market too. And we're going to be really blunt with them and tell them whether they are or they're not. Okay. Because ultimately it comes down to a number. So if they tell us that they want a number and we can't deliver on the number, we're going to tell them that. And we're going to tell them, if you want your business to get sold for 10 times EBITDA, and we think you're worth 7, we're going to give you recommendations on what we think we're going to need to, how we're going to have to help you get there. And a lot of it's tech-oriented, expense-oriented changes that need to happen to drop more to the bottom line. But in a lot of cases, Jason, they don't want to listen, though. So they're not always open to it. They say they are, but then, you know, we try to do everything we can to tell them from a reality perspective what we think's achievable and what's not.
And you know, do they want to sell now? Or are they willing to put in that time again, thinking of houses again? I know it's basic, but in my mind, I think of that person who's like, no, we should be able to get X for our house without remodeling anything. And it's like, you're emotionally attached to it. Like, that's not what the market's going to pay.
Right.
So where like, I guess for that mode, right, what do you think usually causes that, let's say that seller to get into that mindset? Like, I should be able to get X for it in despite what you're telling them.
Well, it's a lot of ego. It's a lot of like, hey, my buddy in oil and gas just sold for 15 times. Why can't I? Or my buddy that works in Silicon Valley got 15 times revenue and you're telling me I can only get 6? Like, what's the deal, Michael? why aren't you thinking about me in the same way?
Yeah, Michael.
So I get a lot of that. And sometimes where we get things like, you know, they got family in the business and they've got certain retirement goals. And they're like, I can't retire on that. I need X. Go get me X. And I get it, right? I'm a business owner too. So I'm not sitting here saying, I don't understand why they're thinking that way. I just like to be able to give them reasons on how they can get to where they want to be. But sometimes age plays a big part in that too. They're 70. They don't have 10 years. They got 3.
Yeah.
But what can I do in 3 years to get ready to sell the business? Or I got a health issue, Jason, where they've got something's going on and they need to get a deal done in a year. And we have to work with them in those situations too. So it comes in a lot of different, there's a lot of different colors in terms of how it gets laid out to the investment banker. But you got to be able to work through it. And so I spent a lot of time and years just trying to help people through a big decision like that.
Yeah. Which is tough, right? Because every situation is different. People have different factors and reasons. And then humans are just unpredictable and sometimes illogical. Emotional.
Emotional. We're not selling a house. We're selling a business that's got a bloodline to it that feeds not only their own self, but their family, their kids, their cousins, their brothers, or you know, go down the list. So yeah. it's an important thing, and we as the advisor have to offer up as much candid, transparent feedback as we can in order to make them understand what we're seeing out there on the street. And sometimes it's not always pretty, but you gotta lay it out there.
How does timing the market go? Because I know in us talking about this before, I know this is something that comes up, is that people try to time the market. They want to, you know, try to get the most at the best time, right?
Jason, but if I could time the market, I would be sitting in a beach in St. Bart's having a couple of cocktails, not having a podcast with you. Because seriously, hey, though,
it is all right. Really, I understand.
It's really a hard thing to time the market, right? Nobody can. You gotta play it. You gotta look at your numbers, your financial performance, where things are, wars, tariffs, everything else going on, and say, and also personally, is this the right time to deal with it? Is this the right time to sell the company? And it isn't always the right time. I could give you a million reasons why right now is a great time to do it, but then if the business owner is not in the mindset where the financial performance isn't there, they're not going to matter anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they haven't had their foot on the gas the whole time, it doesn't matter what the market's doing. If what exactly. They're selling is not a good product, like, you know, for what the market's wanting to pay.
Right.
That's gotta be tough, because I'm sure you see that a lot where people are like, well, when's a good time to sell? When should we put this on the market, like it's a house and you don't want to put it up for sale in winter.
Right.
But
just all those things factor in. But I will tell you, number one, though, is financial performance. Because if the trends year over year are going the other way, you're probably not going to want to do it unless you're forced to do it. And that's where you're in either a distressed situation or whatever it may be, and you don't have an option. You got to sell it. And that's the last place you want to be.
That is. For your industry focus, like all the stuff that we were talking about in the beginning, like I know there's a lot of brokers out there that are, I'll say, generalists, right? Maybe they have a dollar amount, a revenue amount that they like to do. You know, where is that valuable to be so industry specific? Like, and where has that served you well?
Look, there's a lot. I have so many peers that are generalists, and they do a hell of a job at being a generalist. I just hated when I was a generalist, waking up every day and having to continuously just having to learn all the ins and outs, all the issues going on in a particular market, and having to recreate that wheel over and over again. There's some people that really love that. And I just didn't. I wanted to really dive deeply into different ecosystems and get to know every detail about those markets. So when I get on the phone with a business owner and they hear I'm an M&A guy, they're like, great. You don't know anything about my industry. You just know how to sell a business, which is great. But do you really know what's going on day to day? Well, I can tell you from being in all the trade shows and being on boards and everything else and speaking at all these places I go to, that we have a really, really intimate understanding of what's going on in these end markets. And sometimes we know too much. And it scares people a bit, because they're like, man, Michael, you really, and your team really know ins and outs of all the things that are going on day to day. And, you know, so there's sometimes too much value to, you know, where you know too much. It sometimes hurts us when we know too
much. Like what? Like without a, maybe not a specific, or maybe a specific, like what falls in that category of you know too much? And
well, like I'll give you, it's a great question. Like we're in a position where we hear, like our industries are heavily regulated. highly regulated government, federal, state government. And when you know all the nooks and crannies about all of that stuff, sometimes we could be a bit negative, right? Mm-hmm. We could be like, oh man, this is a tough industry, versus a generalist coming in who has no sense of what's going on in these markets, isn't jaded by some of the compliance and regulatory scrutiny that these guys go through on a regular basis. So I could tell you that's where it becomes a bit of a challenge too, when you know all the issues that are going on and you're not a novice to them. That's where it's hurt us sometimes.
Yeah, and I could see that too, especially in the really regulated stuff, like the collections, the debt, you know, the financial services, you know, umbrella type things. And then you've got the call center layers, and then you've got the financial layers, and where, you know a lot, you know how it should be regulated, and then, you know, what's the business doing, what's the buyer gonna wanna do. And then I can see that as coming across as negative, because you're just cautionary, you know.
Yeah. Or Jason, put yourself in the shoes. Like, if you're a business owner in one of these markets and you're talking to me, you're going to have a different conversation than you're going to have with somebody that's brand new to the market, has no idea about all the regulatory and compliance stuff. They're going to be like, no big deal. It's okay. We'll get through it, which is great. They're not going to be like, they're not going to have any predisposition to some of these issues that are going on. They're going to have more of like, every industry is regulated. Let's jump in and see what happens.
But so, where is that? Like, let's say the generalist who doesn't know and just doesn't understand the regulatory issues, working with a company under these umbrellas, these industries, selling it, but then a buyer coming in who knows, right? Where does that mess it up if the broker?
Well, because that's the problem. Because then the buyers are going to go in and they're going to say, wait, why didn't you describe this in your book? Why didn't you tell me about this? Why didn't you tell me about that? Why didn't you give me that up front? Why did you wait till we executed a letter of intent and we're in due diligence to tell me that? It just, the things you live and you learn, those nuances matter to gain trust from the buyer side too, because it's not just you're selling something. You got to get a buyer comfortable with the business model and the regulation and everything else that goes along with it. So you got to know, you got to have that knowledge base too.
Yeah. And it's a tough balance. I've had other people on the show who are specialists, and then I've had people who are on the show that are very anti-specialist, right? And they feel like generalist is the way to go, because you learn across industries and you can apply that. You could debate it either way, but I think within each industry, you have the learning curve, you have the language of it, you have the acronyms, you have the regulations. And like you said, like, you'd rather not have to wake up every day and learn a new business and new everything. Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember, you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation. And like you said, like, you'd rather not have to wake up every day and learn a new business.
Yeah.
And knew everything.
But I could argue it too. I could see the value in a generalist coming in from, hey, I just sold a manufacturing company, to, hey, I just sold a call center business, and it doesn't matter. I just, efficiency wise and building a team and building a capability, that's where I love the industry specialization. It really helps over my 25 years of doing it.
So on the efficiency side, thinking about the other side, because you're dealing with sellers, right? You're on the listing, the business owner side, but you're dealing with buyers as a part of that. What are your thoughts on, like, sticking with the industry means you have collected a lot of buyers, let's say over 25 years, and just when a new business comes up, you just have a pool of people and you go to them, versus the new pool of buyers, like fishing with those pool of buyers versus fresh new buyers? What's your...
I see, in either scenario, you always want to have a fresh database of buyers. Doesn't matter. And if the banker they're going to hire is saying, I'm just going to go back to the well with the five I've sold to for the past 15 years, that may not be the right approach, frankly. I mean, it's really, you want to go talk to new innovative groups, especially with what's going on with the AI changes that are happening. There's all these new buyers that are coming up looking at our industries that we're getting to know on a regular basis. But also, there's value to knowing when you've got buyers that have been there and done it, and they've acquired 5 or 10 other companies, whether that was through you as the advisor or somebody else. It definitely gives credibility. The other big thing that's going on in our world for a lot of the M&A guys is there's this world of independent sponsors that are out there. They're everywhere. These private, they're guys that are either coming out of MBA, out of school, coming from another private equity group, and they're starting their own shop, and they're raising, they're bringing in capital on a deal by deal basis. And they're everywhere. I get from our clients, they forward me their letters. We get the letters directly. And there's a whole world of them. And they've become a big ecosystem of evaluation for advisors like us, because we've got to get to know these people and know where their money is coming from. So I know that's kind of a segue from what you were asking, but I really think it's critical to be able to have a robust buyer pool. New buyers, old buyers, and everything in between.
Yeah, I think it's always that balance. I think it's the right thing for the seller, obviously, because you want some competition. It helps when you have your pool, so you've got some good ones that you can trust. Put it out there, obviously, see what else comes in. But I'm sure that helps in that process. Is the independent sponsor group, is that a good group to work with? I mean, obviously there's going to be highs and lows, but like, is that an effective buyer right now?
They absolutely can be, because a lot of them want to come in and own and operate the company. The issue is a lot of them are great people. They really are smart people, intellectual, like they have got all the capabilities. The thing that's challenging is they don't have a committed fund. So they're going out and they're raising capital for each deal or the main deal that they're going to do. And that is what the issue is, Jason. It's not that they're a bad group or a bad group of buyers. It's just you got to know the risks involved with wanting to transact with them.
Got it. Which means they want to buy the business. They then have to find the money or pool the money together.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then I always wonder too, it's like, MBA, they've got this, they're good at the raising the money. They want to own and operate. What experience do they have for owning and operating? Right.
Many of them don't, yeah. but that's what they're looking for. And I love it. I love the concept, and we've sold companies to independent sponsors. I wish more, frankly, but not as many as I'd like. But they're out there. They're in the eyes of the owners of companies in our industries, and some of them tell a hell of a story. but then getting a deal done has its challenges too.
Yeah. How much are you seeing in your industries, business owners trying to sell directly without an advisor?
All the time. I mean, really? we get brought in when there's a broken deal too, Jason, where you got a deal that they went down the path of somebody, it didn't work out, or they didn't think they thought it was going to be different than it was. And then we get called in to help them with it, help them pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not all bad, just financing didn't come through, lost a client, market change, regulatory issue. We see it, and we work with those situations all the time when they happen.
Hmm. We might have some stuff to talk about when we get to the third segment of the show, but let's move on. I'm really curious about this because you've been doing this for 25 years. The next segment is the broker growth. So this is the pipeline growth, the both of the sales, but the marketing, the relationships. Obviously, if you have made it this long, you've figured something out. I know you mentioned trade shows, you mentioned conferences, boards, associations. That's how I know you. From all of those different factors, what do you put on the list for the things that you found work for growing your pipeline as a business broker, M&A advisor?
I think a lot of people, when I talk to business owners on why they hire guys like us, is because they've either gotten to know that individual over years and years, where they got referred to them from somebody else they know and trust. And I think those are the key, right? And your willingness to stick in it, right, for a long period of time. Because when you meet a business owner, Jason, it's not like the first day I meet somebody, they're going to be like, Michael, let's get this business sold tomorrow or yesterday. It's more of, let's break bread, let's go have lunch, let's grab a beer, let's get to know each other. And frankly, those are the best relationships where we've been most useful, is because they want to develop a relationship and get to know the ins and outs of what's going on and why they're looking to transact. So I may meet somebody and we don't do anything and don't generate any revenue for 3 years. You know, they're getting my newsletter, they're seeing our podcasts, you know, like this, they're seeing us out there, but we're not doing much for them because they're not ready to do anything. So I view marketing in this space and growing, whether you're a generalist or a specialist, is you got to be able to do more than just M&A. You got to be able to touch them in different ways. So we developed a valuation business, an exit prep business. I'm on boards of other companies, in that way, in order to develop the relationships. So it isn't just call me when you're ready to sell or buy. But you got to be willing to commit to that as an advisor. You can't just expect it to happen overnight. And I tell a lot of the young guys on my deal team the same thing, because they're developing their careers too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in my experience with you matches that, right? It's the long-term relationship game. We've gone years without talking, and then when I reach out to you, you're always happy to chat. There's never been anything financial that's helped you in any way, but you play the long-term relationship game versus, like you said, the transactional game, which is, you know, here's my info when you're ready to buy or sell. Let me know,
but
then move on.
But I think that that's a chat. Like when you go, like I go to one of our industry associations, ACG, and I just went to a meeting today in Philadelphia, and you talk to a lot of the M&A guys, and a lot of them are transaction, transaction, transaction. I think the relationship is really critical long-term for success in this type of a business. And it's in so far so good.
Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, obviously it's working well for you. What else is on this list, right? Obviously relationships, the big one. What else would you put on the broker growth list?
Well, I think the ability to tell your story, right? To be able to tell people about what's going on in a particular end market or the financing side of a deal. People want to know what's happening, and making sure that you as the advisor have knowledge and understanding of what they're experiencing in their business. And I feel like the more you can stay in front of them, kind of like a drip campaign, right? Every month, every quarter, they're seeing you. They're seeing the company. They're seeing tips on how to prepare for sale, whatever it may be. So they're remembering you. So when the time comes, they're thinking about you in that particular moment or year to work together to do something.
Yeah. And what I love about that, like you were talking about, the knowledge and understanding, which to me, when you're applying that and you're using some situation scenarios, the transactions, you're going through the successful ones, the non-successful ones, and sharing that, to me, that falls under the bucket of wisdom, because now it's like, okay, I know this thing, but here's what actually happened versus just like the book knowledge. And then when you're doing that in the mode you're talking about, because I'm subscribed to your newsletter, I read them, you know, I read the content, and then it puts you in that position of being a guide where it's like, when they're ready, they know that you, Michael Lamb, and the company know how to help people get across the finish line when you're ready, going back to the long term. But it's like, you're the guy because you've been in the trenches, you've done it, you've got the scars, you know how to help people.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you summed it up well, Jason.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business. And you know, it's interesting too, because I see a lot of people, especially the sales people out there, right? Everything is sales, but like where they feel like their job is to be the hero. And the problem is that the other person wants to be the hero. So you got to be the guide. Anything else on the list? I mean, I feel like in those two categories, if you did the long-term relationships and the content and sharing all that, like that's a lot. I know it's a lot that people don't do.
I don't know. I think the other, I'll give you the last one, which is just developing a culture in the business, right? I got a great team of people that we work together, and we work really well together. And I think for any firm that does what we do, they've got to instill that in their people too, right? It's not just you, it's everybody that's surrounding you that helps you get to your goal. Because at the end of the day, you got to close transactions, right? You got to get them done, and you got to work on them, and you got to, and that process unto itself is not easy. So the culture side of growing a practice in this type of a profession is an important one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important, and you know, I think the intention with what you said is great, because every organization has a culture, right? And everything is an organization, like even a family or a club or, you know, a sports team, they're all organizations, right? And so if you're not careful, the culture is there by default versus what are you building and having it be an extension of you and what you want to build. And then what's the point for the customers, right? What's the point for them? Yeah, that's interesting to think about it, especially with the team dynamic and what you've built over the years. There's a lot of brokers out there that are solo, they're by themselves, they have that, or they want to grow a team. So I think that's important to focus on the culture, right? Which I love, because at one point we were talking about the AI, the technology, we're talking about all that bits, but you know, I feel like our
business, I would love to AI enable the heck out of our business. I really would. But a lot of the business owners that we're dealing with, they're not 20. They're 60, they're 70, they're 80. They like talking, right? They like interacting personally and professionally, right? They enjoy it. So I think over the next 10, 20 years, I think the job of people like us is to figure out how the AI tool is going to work to make our work and our workflow faster and more efficient to get companies sold, bought and sold.
Yeah. And I can see that, right? Like, A, over time, the technology is going to get better and more efficient and easier to use on both sides, right? Your side and the other side, let's say that business owner. And then also, where is the demographic of the people over 10, 20 years going to change who are selling businesses as, let's say, that the baby boomers are retiring now-ish till whenever. And then there's the wave of the people who bought and then now they're reselling, and then, you know, they're more comfortable with more technology involved, let's say.
Yeah, I think you're going to see, and in the role that I play today, and by the time the kids that are coming out, you know, that are 10, that are going to be in college in 8-9 years, they're the type of owner that they're going to deal with if they end up in business brokerage or M&A, I don't know what they're going to look like.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to, it's an interesting question to ponder, right? What is the,
well, go ahead.
I just don't know what the business owner is going to look like at that point, 20 years from now, you know?
Yeah.
What are they going to want? Right.
Yeah. What are they going to want? What is that going to be like? You know, because think of the baby boomer, which is probably the majority of sellers, but not all of them, you know, weren't raised with technology. Gen X wasn't born with, you know, internet technology in their hand. And then, you know, at some point that's going to shift to the people who just have always had technology and can use that as a tool. Right. And it's just a part of everything. It's just an appendage. Like, when does that take over?
Right. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how our profession evolves over the next 10 years with the advent of AI and what the owners of those companies want from people like us. Mm. Are they going to want to talk to us? Are they going to want to have a beer? Are they just going to want to go to a website and say, sell my company and get me as much as you possibly can, and I don't talk to anybody? I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like that's already a thing now for some industries, right? I know business broker that does websites. Basically, that's what they are selling, and those kind of technology companies. And it's like, you know, how transactional is that in the process? In 10 years from now, will sellers care to meet buyers and care about what they're handing over and who they're handing it to and who's going to continue? I mean, I would imagine so, but who knows, right? Like, you know, at what point in the industry of small business does it change from all founded to a percentage that's purchased, where it's not that person's initial founded legacy, right? After 30, 40. They bought it.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's like building your own custom house and then trying to sell that, how emotionally attached you are, versus buying a house that was already there that somebody else already owned, and then you sell it. It's like, I care, but it's not the same. Like, I didn't build this house.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, I feel like those that are new coming into business brokerage or M&A is to really think through all of the things we're talking about, because there will be really interesting opportunities that result from how you interact with the business owner or the C-suite executives over the next 10 to 20 years in this industry.
Now, this is normally a question I would ask for the after show, but where this is going, I'm just do whatever I want. So I want to ask it to you now, because it's the perfect spot, is normally what I ask is, in 5 years from now, which would be 2031, what do you think business broker, M&A advisors, intermediaries would need to do to be successful? Like, in 5 years from now, what is it going to take?
I think they're going to need, look, again, you're hearing me from an industry specialization perspective. I think they're going to need, people like me are going to need to have a team of people, an expertise to differentiate themselves, and an ability to be efficient and fast at what they do, more rapidly than we've ever seen. Like, there's no more, hey, it's going to take 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks to get you to market. You're going to be in the market within a within 2 days because of how quickly AI and everything else that's been developed has taken the workflow. So I think that changes it too. And our cost structure as a M&A firm may go down because we're not going to need as many analysts. Is Claude going to basically become our analyst over time so we could operate with less people? You're still going to need people to sit over top of the AI to manage it, but is it going to be as human intensive as it is today? I don't think it will be.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that, like the speed of what could be done and how quickly you could get to market with a listing in say 5 years based on what's happened in the last few years alone, like how quickly technology.
Yeah. I think it's going to change. It's going to change like crazy, but keep going.
Yeah. And then what's the expectation from the client side, which would be the seller, the business owner side? What are they expecting? Are they, you know, is there enough education at that point in the market where people expect to go to market in a few days? And if they work with a broker who says 3 weeks, is that broker just going to lose to a competitor who can get it done in a couple of days?
So. It may be, but I do feel like this world that we're in today is becoming more and more ADHD-like. Right. Nobody wants to wait for Starbucks for more than a minute. They all want it now. And they don't want to wait. And I feel like that's for everything else too, including our services. They don't want it to take weeks. They want it to take days or hours. And I do think that we're going to get there. I think the interactions will change too. I think you're going to see less interactions. Hand-to-hand combat between buyers and sellers. I think a lot of that's going to become more and more automated. Not sure if that's good, frankly. I think it's going to be, as I lived through COVID and saw people buying businesses online and over Zoom. And I would tell you, I think a lot of things were missed without the interaction. But I think every industry's dependent for that.
Yeah, it's tough because, I've read some books about it. I've heard it, referred to as the Amazon effect. You could call it whatever effect you want. You could call it the Uber Eats, Instacart effect, whatever. Like, I have that same mode where when I'm in the car, we order Starbucks in advance so that we can just pull up and grab it, not even wait in the drive-thru. Like, I don't want to go through that painful process. Like, and if it's not ready, what the heck happened? And so how much that conditions and then spoils us, right? Like if I order something on Amazon and I can't get it by tomorrow, it's like, what happened? Like, that's not okay. And right. They recently, where I live, they're building a distribution center not far. Like the drones will probably be able to drop stuff off within minutes to my yard based on where the building is. But like now, same day, don't have to pay extra. And unfortunately, that then conditions everyone to think, well, everything should just be that easy, right? Like selling my business, like why not? Like I can get everything else done quickly.
I want to get everything done now. And I think that now a view of the world translates to our profession. And I think you've got to be prepared for that and the work effort that's involved to make that happen.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because with what you do for a client as an advisor, is most likely something they've never gone through. So they don't understand what's involved. And the best they've got is, I sold a house, I sold a car, I sell my goods and services. This should be pretty easy too, right? Like,
the best line I get a lot is, Michael, I read that book. I read that M&A book about the deal on Wall Street and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. I got this. I know how I'm going to handle everything.
I got this. I read that chapter about multiples. Here's what I think I'm going to get. Everything's ready. Let's go. When do I get my money?
Exactly. Yeah. And I take the approach when I hear that kind of stuff, which is, look, you're coming in more armed than most, right? Most people, this is the biggest transaction or the biggest life thing that they've done. And I tell people that they've got to get educated, whether it's talking to people like me or others or whoever, get educated and learn about what the process is that you're about to go into. It can only help you.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, let's segue to the next one, because I think it's a fascinating unplanned segue perfectly into the deal that got away portion, where people listen to the show, they know this is where we talk about the lessons of the lost deal. You've been doing this for 25 years. We talked about it before jumping on here. It's like, if you don't have stories from this, there's something's going on.
I got too many, man. I've got too many. I really do. And I wish I didn't have so many, but I do. Probably the biggest story I had, or one of the ones that's noteworthy, is I never assume anything anymore.
Okay.
I never assume, like, especially when I'm dealing with a business that's got multiple owners or a board, that I know everybody or everybody knows me, because it's not always the case. And I lost the deal a few years ago because I assumed that I knew and had a relationship with the four people, but I really knew two. I didn't know the four. I thought I did, but I didn't. And if I had spent the time to get to know the other two and the board, the people that were around the board, it would have probably led to us being hired. And our business, as we talked about earlier, relationships matter. They matter, at least right now they do. 10 years, I don't know, but right now they do. And if you've got the relationships and you've been working a particular prospect for a long time, it's on the advisor's side to get to know the owners of that business. Not just one of the owners, not just two, but all four in this case. And I think that was a thing I learned a while ago that I never forget.
Yeah, that's a tough one too. I spend most of my time in sales, like dealing with consumers and talking to one person, and you know, there's a spouse involved. It's like, unless you talk to both, even if you close it now, it's probably coming back. Like, they're going to get home and get yelled at for buying something or doing something. And so similar to this, right? Like, if you don't have a relationship and communication with everybody, then you're assuming, in your case, the two people you're talking to is enough to carry or will advocate on behalf. And you don't know. And if you're not there, then you're just hoping. And that's not going to work. And that's unfortunate that happened, and that was the lesson.
But look, I'm fortunate that it did. Because I took that and I learned from it. When you screw up, you learn, right? Much as it's painful sometimes, you learn. Yeah. And you threw things for the next one. So I always remember that one, Jason. That was one that I was really ticked off about for a long time, but I've gotten over it. I've learned, which is the most important.
You've forgiven, but you have not forgotten. You will not. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I know those, you know, sometimes those aren't fun to talk about. I appreciate, though, because it's a great cautionary tale lesson for everybody, right? Again, I told you this, you know, leading into us, you know, setting up this recording, is that I imagine our conversation may be found by other advisors and brokers, might be found by sellers, people in your industries that you focus on, and they're wanting to learn more about you. Could be found by buyers. Like, I think that lesson of that lost deal is important for everybody, because, you know, again, if it could be a seller of a company, make sure everyone's on board. Like, make sure everyone's a part of the conversation, you know, especially if you have a way you want things to go. Because if you don't, if you just assume, you know, it's not going to work. So it doesn't.
Yeah, I have it. If you looked at my screen, at the bottom of it says, don't ever assume anything. I don't assume it. I really don't. Like, I've worked my whole career to try to get away from assuming certain things, because when you do, it really can lead to confusion, especially in the sales process, Jason, because you may miss something very important by assuming it.
And one of the big things that gets salespeople and business people in trouble with assuming is also assuming that everyone knows what you know, right? Assuming that, you know, especially if you've done it for so long, like someone like you, you have to be careful and intentional because you've done this for 25 years, that you can see the matrix, right? Like you can see it, and you have to be careful not to assume that everyone can see the matrix, because these business owners you're dealing with, they don't deal with this every day like you do. So they don't know. And so I love that about, you know, not assuming anything.
I don't know too. But I also think that people in our profession have to be willing to listen to. Because in sales, right, it's very much persuasion, informant, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know as well as I do, listening isn't always a quality that a lot of people come to the table with. And I will tell you, it's been a learned process for me too, to be able to stop talking sometimes and listen to what other people are trying to say and communicate. Because the more you listen, the value creation goes up immensely in our world.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. We could, like a seminar workshop we could hold on that. It's easy to remember 2 years, one mouth, right? God gave us 2 years and only one mouth for a reason. So just listen twice as much as you talk. And it's interesting too, funny side note, like if you ever read anything about people who spend time with successful people, like a Warren Buffett, where they're like a charity thing and you pay this money to have lunch with him. I've seen the stories over and over again, is that he'll spend that hour asking you more questions than you get to ask. And it's like, cause he's just ultra curious, just wants to ask questions and then listen. Doesn't need to talk, doesn't need to share anything. And, you know, I think great salespeople understand that. And I'll say, like in all the conversations we've ever had over the years, that's you do that very well. So
I try to, man. I mean, I wish I got a degree in psychology too. That would be really useful as well for my day-to-day activities. But
yes, I agree.
Yet for that.
My bachelor's degree in marine biology has not helped me in any way at this. I mean, I'm fun at aquariums and seafood restaurants, but that's about it. But yeah, like it's one of those things where, you know, it'd be so good to know, because ultimately, even going back to the AI stuff as we wrap up here, is that, you know, the AI and the technology, what's going to happen is all of these things are going to get automated. AI is going to be everywhere. And then all that's left is going to be humans, right? Humans talking to humans and relationships with humans. And so like, that's what's going to result. And I think, you know, most people don't understand themselves or others well enough. And I think that the psychology piece is so helpful. So, Michael, thank you for being on here. I'm so glad, like full circle from where we met and all those years ago to now on a business broker show. Like it's just a fun path. I love how life goes, and you being a long-term relationship person, always kind of present and willing to chat and be a part of things. I appreciate you being here. For people who want to contact you, find out more of what you're doing. We've got the website, which I'll have the link in the show notes. What's the best place for them to go? The website?
Website, man. Yeah. www.corpadvisorysolutions.com, just as it sounds.
Perfect. So corpadvisorysolutions.com. Also on LinkedIn, we'll have your info in the show notes. People can find you again. Michael, thank you for being here, for what you do in the industry, how much you're involved, associations, boards, conferences, speaking, and then all that you gave here to the audience. I know it was valuable. I got a lot from it. So I appreciate you being here.
Man, it was great. Thank you for putting together.
Yeah, of course. And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to reach out to Michael, support him, support the people in the industry that are really looking, you know, now in relationships, the long-term relationships, playing the long game, also the future, and really doing the right thing. I mean, in the industry, it's you hear me say it all the time on the show, it's not very regulated as an industry of business brokers and advisors. In fact, the companies that Michael's working with are way more regulated than you know, this industry here. So let's promote and support the people who are the professionals in the space, which is why I do this and put this kind of episode out. So as always, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.